Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, to the very first episode of On the Beat, brought to you exclusively on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. This is a show where we will bring you an exclusive interview with a different Bills beat reporter each week and talk about the things, the swirling topics, if you will, of our Buffalo Bills. I'm Joe Miller, and you can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired. Please do me a favor. Please like, please subscribe on whatever platform that you are consuming this podcast, vidcast on. And as we always like to say here on the Overreaction Sports Network, whether this podcast finds you around a cup of coffee, at the gym with your AirPods in, on the drive to work, or watching us live right now, let us just say one more time, welcome. Today, we are joined by a Bills beat reporter from Syracuse.com, as well as the co-host of the Shout Buffalo podcast with Ryan Talbot, a person who I consider a friend, despite his copious amounts of perfect hair that I envy, very much envy as a balding, redheaded man. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Matt Parrino. Matt, how are you today?
I'm good. And listen, you got other features, man. Like, you know, you're killing it in the gym. Like, you know, at your age, I'm impressed, dude. Like, if I can, and that's not ageism. A dig at your age. That's not
there
a dig.
Ageism in there. There was ageism in there. What'd you say?
I'm 42 this year. Like, if I could still be in the kind of shape that you're in when I catch you, dude, that's impressive, dude.
I'll be 51 in June. So 51 in a couple of months. And things that I didn't have on my 51 birthday list, starting a new podcast network necessarily from scratch. That isn't completely true. There was, as you're aware, all of the rumblings stuff and Vox Media stuff happened the day after the Stephon Diggs stuff happened. I was in Phoenix, so I was completely like out of pocket and really couldn't do anything because I was in meetings all day long, both days. How did the rumblings news, how did that hit you?
Well, it was sad first and foremost. I mean, when I came back, you know, some of the first people that I really connected with in the podcast space, you know, Anthony Marino, mm-hmm. Matt mm-hmm. Warren, mm-hmm. Bruce Nolan, you, Spence, I mean, that whole crew, later on Sarah Larson, I mean, that whole crew, yep. You know, I consider friends, and you hate to see that something like this happen to your friends, but, and also like they've been such a staple. I mean, Buffalo Rumblings is continuing, of course, mm-hmm. but like that podcast network, I feel like it's continuing. Plus my, protege, if you will, AJ Cebulski, producer at the Shout podcast, he wound up over there as well. So a lot of love for everybody over there. And I think everybody's going to do big things. It's like in 2024, like, more than ever, you don't really need the traditional like flagship publication to go out and on your own and do exactly what you're doing. So I feel like we're going to see a lot of fun, interesting things for everybody that was involved to come out of it, hopefully.
Yeah, that's kind of the important thing. Buffalo Rumblings is not ending, discontinuing. So all the SB Nation, Sports Blog Nation stuff that Buffalo Rumblings does, the writing and all that stuff is still going to continue. Vox Media just basically canceled every sports podcast in every market. So like there are no more SB Nation podcast networks.
Was there anything done that kind of like explained that? Did they explain it internally at all? Or was it just like, we're done?
I don't want to disparage, even though this is going to sound a little disparaging, but it's the truth. We all got an email at the same time to include the people that were running the network. So it's not like they were told ahead of time, hey, by the way, next week an email is going out, you're all going to be out of a job, right? Because like the people that run this stuff are, they're paid, right? I mean, we were getting paid too, but not like life-changing money. So it was a little, I sent an email back, I'll put it that way. Hey, the way you handled this was not great. Like people that are in charge shouldn't be getting DMs because they're at work going, hey, did you see that email? Right. That's not really kind of how that should work. But at the end of the day, that wasn't really probably in Buffalo Rumblings' hands. So I don't fault Buffalo Rumblings. My email went to Vox Media, by the way. It didn't go to Buffalo Rumblings. Right. But yeah, so if you love the content that Buffalo Rumblings gives you from a writing standpoint, all the writers over there, Matt, the editor in chief, not Matt Warren, the other Matt Byram. Yes, they're still going to continue and keep doing that kind of stuff. And then it'll be interesting to see where all the podcasters, all the ones you named, All the ones that we're both very close with, Jay Spencer King, Bruce Nolan, obviously AJ, Sarah, John and Jerry are going to kind of hook up with me and kind of see where this goes. Like there's no, this isn't like, oh, the next 5 years are set in stone. It's going to, it's if one of them gets picked up by something different or gets a better offer or this thing doesn't work, we'll just close it down. So just kind of where it's at. So yeah. Stephon Diggs. So Stephon Diggs, we're going to talk a little bit about Stephon Diggs here on the very first ever episode of On the Beat. Very grateful to have you with us, Matt. Thank you so much for being part. The very first sidebar, the very first person beat reporter that I had on one of my shows was you. I don't know if you remember it. It was around the COVID thing. There was like some weird COVID rule that they had just passed. And I was like, I don't even know what this means. And I, on a whim, reached out to you and I was like, Matt, can you come on and explain what the heck? I don't remember what it was. So you and I have been connected for a long time and super grateful for you. But as it comes to like beat reporters, I feel like the fans, a lot of times people like me are a little bit ignorant. And I don't mean that in a bad way. We're just not necessarily sure, like, who's where and why. I know that some guys like you and Joe B like travel with the team and then some guys don't travel with the team. Are there levels of access for the media guys, for you guys? Like what access do you have versus what other, like access? Like if you're in the interview room, do you get into the locker room? Do you choose not to be in a place? Like how does that work?
So everybody that's credentialed by the Bills, if you have a season credential, if you have access to the media room, if they credential you for the season, you get all the access to all of the player availability.
Gotcha.
So how that happens is either they bring players, like in the offseason, for instance, right before or after the draft. I'm not sure exactly when they do it, maybe before the draft. Usually we speak to Josh Allen. Von Miller spoke last year. They bring them into the media room. So that's one kind of way that we have access. The other is during the season, like once training camp starts, when there's practices, there's open availability after practice. So we'll see them coming off of the field and then we'll get like 45-minute window after practice where locker room is open. And that's when you have the most access, where you can go in, you can walk around, you can talk to different players. There'll be podiums, sessions set up. Josh Allen doesn't do locker room. It's like you can approach him, but he is not, he will probably tell you no, that he's not going to talk because he has that one designed time per week, Wednesdays at after practice at 2, and then after games as well. Coaches are a little bit different because we have so much access to Sean, especially during the season. We get him like 3 or 4 times a week.
Right.
Brandon, once the season starts, is much more hard to come by. Like big news would have to happen for him to be available. Right. Otherwise, you have to kind of request him. And that's another part of all of this. Like pretty much anything you need to get done, player wise from a media perspective, you can request access for. It's not always going to be on your timeline or fit into the way that you're hoping to get it done, but the Bills do a pretty good job of making sure that everybody gets things available. So I think at the heart of what you're asking is, how do we get to view the players in almost like their natural setting?
Yes.
And to me, that time happens in that open locker room segment, because the Josh Allen that's at the podium is completely different than the Josh Allen that's in the locker room playing foosball and ping pong and, you know, much more animated, real life version of him. And so over the years, like, you know, you just, I built a really good relationship my first couple seasons with John Feliciano, and there was no story I was necessarily doing with him, but I just so happened to kind of land on his locker a lot of times waiting for whatever. Like Lorenzo would come in after a workout. He would go, practice would end. He would come into the locker room. He'd get his stuff before all of us could get in. And then he was one of the, you know, at that time, 18, 19, he was one of the guys that you really wanted to try to talk to because he was a great quote. He gave you the time. It was real. So I'd wait over by his locker. And because of that, I'd be standing right next to John Feliciano and we talk after a while. And then it was like, oh, we both are huge UFC fans. I worked at the UFC. So we kind of found like that common ground. And then you just kind of become friendly with people in different ways. I had the same kind of relationship with Dane Jackson and Micah Hyde over the years. Although Micah was a little bit different last year. You could tell in a lot of ways, I think that it felt like maybe the the end was coming. Not that was going to be the last year, but it just seemed a little bit different for him. Poyer as well. But yeah, I hope that kind of answers.
No, that's you literally, you saw, you know where I'm going with this, right? So because especially when it comes to the smoke kind of around this situation that would not go away, even when other like situations, and I keep going back to Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase around week 9, 10, or 11 last season, you know, they're interviewing him at his locker and they're asking him about free agency. And he's like, I'm taking all the money. And he wasn't kidding. He's like, I'm taking all the money, as much as I can get them taken. And they were like, well, what about T? What about Tyler? Like, don't you want to keep the guys together? He's like, I don't give a crap about them. If there's money left over, they can have it. I'm taking all the money. Right. And that like never went anywhere. Like not in the national media. Not everybody's like, ha, ha, ha. Jamar Chase is taking all the money or he's going to be gone. And it's like, and meanwhile, Stephon Diggs tweets something silly. And like, it just, the smoke continues to billow. We know, I know just from, I said firsthand accounts on the show on Sunday with Jerry and John. Not firsthand. I just know people of firsthand accounts. So it's not like I'm talking to Steph or talking to Josh, but I know people that know them that have told me that the offseason in 2023 was not good for them, that they spent quite a bit of time not talking to each other. Smoke continues like to billow, right? And then they kind of fixed it up during the season.
This past offseason, you mean, right? Not the one that we're in, but last year.
Between 22 and 23. Like there was after the Bengals game. After the Bengals game, Steph was not happy and they did not really get along too well. And then like obviously they fixed it up, they patched it up during the season, and then the wheels kind of start falling off or whatever, things kind of start happening. So yes, all of that to say, you know, I'm looking kind of like to you for the Tim Grahamism. Not that I'm looking for a hot take, you know, but the Tim Graham thing came out this week that after the Jets game, Josh gave Steph the hand and said, I'm not talking to you about this. It's one effing game, right? Did you notice, did you see, you talked about Hyde, you talked about Poyer and just the body language, the mannerisms, maybe how they, their headspace were different in 2023 based on years prior. Did you notice a difference between Steph and Josh this past year versus 2020, 2021?
So first of all, let me say on the Tim Graham thing, like this is a good like PSA for fans. Like when you see somebody as experienced as Tim, who's been doing this for 20, 25 years now, like, you know, in different walks, professional sports, he's as good as it gets. So when he's kind of, sometimes people feel like he's like pushing an agenda or pushing a narrative, like the Ken Dorsey thing is like a perfect example. People were killing him for that. And it's like, he saw the writing on the wall long before anybody else did. And because the reason for that is like, we're in there, we're seeing, to your point earlier, a different version of all this. And I didn't necessarily see a change in the dynamic between Josh and Diggs, but what I did see was like, it almost felt like what they were doing, what we're used to seeing them doing, was so forced. Mm. Like when you'd see those like viral videos coming from practice, where they're like fake boxing or doing that kind of thing, it almost felt like a stage show because you never saw them together when the cameras weren't on. You know what I mean? Like I never saw them walking together after practice. I never saw them in the locker room together. And I'm not in there all the time. So I can't it's this overarching thing, but definitely, I mean, sometimes we try to make excuses for things. And what I think I was doing, cause we talked about like how we all went into this offseason and what we thought the future would hold. I didn't see a place we can get to where Brandon Bean would be okay with a $31 million cap hit with that player not being on the roster when he's already on the roster. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Unless there was something so catastrophic that he needed to get him out of the building. And to me, in not wanting to kind of get into the details last week after the move happened and we talked to Brandon, that he says everything with his silence in the sense that this was a problem that needed to be resolved. It couldn't go on any further. And I think that something I wasn't thinking enough about before the move that I should have been is like, you have to kind of look around the league and you have to pivot, right? And I think that's what Brandon did so good early in the Josh era, like the Andre Holmes, Kelvin Benjamin, they got out of that business and switched over to, you know, the guys, Cole and Steph eventually.
John Brown.
John Brown. But you look around the league, and I keep using this example, and it's probably going to become redundant here over the course of the offseason. Look what the Green Bay Packers have done in the draft over the last 3 years. They have literally just stockpiled the cupboards at wide receiver in the second round, in the third round, in the fifth round, in the seventh round. It doesn't matter where. They're just bringing in wide receivers, and with a really good young quarterback, they're just figuring it out. Was it great at the beginning of the season? No. But by the playoffs, they were about as feared in offense as there was in the NFL. Guys took that next step. And go back and look at the stats last year. They were number three in the NFL in passing touchdowns. You can do it through the draft. And it doesn't even have to come through that. I know I'm putting the cart before the horse. We're going to talk about this a little bit later. But yeah. You can find a new identity for your offense. And maybe it was just about Brandon saying, we don't want the identity of this offense to be Stephon Diggs anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a pod saying the last pod I did after the season ended, I did a pod saying that, you know, hey, should I stay or should I go with Stephon Diggs? And it's like, he's staying. He's not going anywhere. The Bills, it's $29 million against the cap, and it's 31 if they get rid of him. They're not going to go $31 million into the hole without a wide receiver. One, I was on your show, the Shout podcast, and even you were on the microphone going, he's not going anywhere. Right. So I guess, how shocked were you when the news broke? And now that the dust has kind of settled, like, where are you landing with the whole thing?
Yeah, and I guess maybe even still, I didn't know how fractured this whole thing was internally. And again, like, that like little one-off for Tim to see into the dynamic in that way with that interaction between Josh and Steph. You know, he was on the, you know, he was the one at the Diggs press conference pressing Stephon on Trayvon Diggs's tweets.
Right.
Which was great. And actually, I was a little bit critical of Adam Benigni, who kind of took it into a little bit of a love Adam. Good, great dude. But he took it in a very confrontational direction, and he made it more about Diggs. And I don't think we dove into enough, like, why is this okay that your brother is tweeting this stuff at your franchise quarterback? Like, for Diggs to never come out and pour any like water on that, everybody should have known from that point on that there was, you know, this can't continue. And I'm wondering if it goes back to even then when Bean was like, this can't go anymore. The thing also, I didn't do enough of the deep dive into the cap numbers. And Jason from Over the Cap, he put out a great thread a couple days after and explained why it's more intelligent for Bean to eat this large dead cap number this year, as opposed to run it back one more year, hope that you do something different after the last 3 years, you've not gotten over the hump with this current setup. And then, oh, by the way, you go through all that and you take this huge cap hit, dead cap hit on the other side of it. So this is Brandon from a personality culture perspective, from a cap perspective, and from a potentially like designing a new offense perspective, just looking to kind of flip the script a little bit on what we know at this point has just not been working for this Bills team. And, you know, they're not being able to beat the Chiefs, the Bengals, who are going to be back this year, and they have to reimagine this thing a little bit.
And the Texans, everybody else. Now that the Bills have clearly a huge gap to fill at wide receiver, or at least we feel that they do. We know what happened last year at the end of the season where Steph was out there. His reps weren't necessarily limited. He was pulling himself off the field, as Josh Norman told us. Like, hey, Josh is in all the formations. He's pulling himself out, but he was getting targets. He was dropping the football. His production was going down, and the Bills were still finding success through Kincaid, through Khalil Shakir, through the running game. From a draft standpoint, you talked about it at the last Shout podcast that we did live, or that you did live at Wingnuts, which, by the way, if anybody hasn't gone to that, you should absolutely go. Wingnuts is a great venue. The food is good, and just the environment is really cool, and it's great to see, obviously, you and Ryan be there as well. So just small plug for you guys. I love, as you know, going there. I've been a couple times. Do you feel that their draft situation, their draft focus is now more centered on wide receiver than ever? And are we moving up? Is that what you think? Is it sit? Do you hold? Who do you like? Where are you at on the whole draft thing?
I'm hesitant to go all in on move up because I only think there's going to be three. And there was a mock draft that came out today from PFF that I thought was on the money. I think we could see three wide receivers go in the top seven picks. We can see four quarterbacks and three receivers. You could go quarterback 1 through 4 and receiver 5 through 7. And people think, wait a second, Tennessee's not going to take a wide receiver. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they might. Like, if they have him that much higher than whoever the top tackle is, I know Joe Alt's the popular name at that spot out of Notre Dame. I think they could definitely go. And I don't know if Brandon wants to depart with that much draft capital when you see all of these examples. Like, what is the one example of a team drafting a top 10 wide receiver that turns into that turns them into a Super Bowl contender? Can you think of one off the top of your head?
It would be Garrett Wilson might be the only one, right? Is it when did Garrett Wilson go? Was he top 10?
I think he was 10, but they're not a Super Bowl contender.
They're not a contender, but he is everything that he was billed to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm not saying that. Like, I think that there's guys that you Jamar Chase, right? Like, I guess maybe that's the example that you can make.
Number one overall, right?
Or he was number five, four, somewhere in that range.
You gotcha. But I'm not a draft Nick. So just
I know, me either. So I went back and I looked at the let me actually pull this up because I think this will be really cool. I haven't actually put this on my show yet. We're going to probably talk about it at some point. So I went back and I looked at the top 10 picks since 2024 and who are the wide receivers that have gone in the top 10 or the top five. This was an argument about Marvin Harrison. So a little bit like,
and Chase was the fifth pick overall.
Right. So I got Jamar Chase in 2021 at four. I have him at four. Was it five?
It says, according to Bengals select Jamar Chase with number five pick in the 2021 draft.
Okay. Argument still works. 26. Yep. So that's one for a win, right? Mm-hmm. 2016, Corey Davis. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a big L. 2015. Now we're going back almost 10 years and it's only happened three times, right? Amari Cooper. He was fourth overall. Now I would make the argument that he wasn't a hit because he didn't hit for the Raiders. He ended up going to the Cowboys when it really still wasn't a hit. And he was more of a hit with Cleveland than he's ever been. So I'd take him out of that category.
Yeah. He's very much been a steady Eddie, right?
Yeah. And he's coming on like his season last year. Like he was a stud. I remember Sauce Gardner was on one of the podcasts and he put him in his top five receivers, which I was like, whoa. Okay. 2014, plug your ears, Bills fans, Sammy Watkins. Okay.
Dum, dum, dum.
L. 2012, fifth overall, Justin Blackmon. Mm. 2011, AJ Green. He was really good for Cincinnati.
Yes.
I think that's
for a while.
That's
yes.
Good. 2007. This is the dream, right? Like if we're talking Marvin Harrison and the reason for taking him top five overall, Calvin Johnson, to me, he was second overall, the highest draft pick, I think, at wide receiver since 2000. Then it was Braylon Edwards in 2005, L, and then Larry Fitzgerald, Hall of Famer, 2004. So there's a couple of hits sprinkled in there, and it doesn't really play to my whole, like, top, what we're talking about here in terms of the top 10, more so top five and Marvin. But if you trade up and you give up multiple assets to go do it, you need to make sure that that person that you're going up to get is going to come in day one and be the everything that you need him to be. And it can't be somebody that like is polarizing in the locker room, polarizing in the meeting rooms, right? Agreed. Like one of the things on Malik Nabers is that, you know, whether it's fair or not, like some of the culture fit questions that have come up. And I'm talking about even before this weird report that came out a couple of days ago. I'm not even really referring to that. But if you look on some of his scouting reports, I've seen that kind of like in, you know, baked into some of these things. If you go up and get that guy and he turns into a Stephon Diggs type player where it's more, a little bit more about the me, it's the we, as long as the me is covered. Like that's how I kind of, you know,
well said.
Put Diggs in that thing. And here's another sidebar. I loved Stephon Diggs. I loved covering him. I loved talking to him. I thought as a human being, the dude was awesome. Like there's it's no secret. Everybody in that locker room loved the guy. That's when you talk to anybody, they'd put him over, including Josh to the end. And I think he was probably gritting his teeth at the end, having to do it, but he did it. And so like, I think that's part of it too, is like, I think the Bills put up with it for as long as they did because he was a great player and he was a good dude one-on-one with almost everybody in that organization and outside the organization. It's a shame that it ended that way. But in terms of getting up into the top 10, Brandon Bean has said it before. You're never one player away. They're not one player away now, Joe.
No,
like, let's be honest. This roster has been retooled dramatically.
They're missing a lot of guys.
They might be good. Like, they still might be good. They might have a good draft. They might find a couple starters. They might do some damage in that June to July free agent period, which he did a good job last year. We'll see. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm mortgaging draft picks to go up and get one guy when it's still a little bit of the roll of the dice.
Yeah, they've got what? It's 10 picks now, right? With the move with Diggs. And they need a 2022 Chiefs draft where they hit on 6 out of 7 guys. They're not going to draft 10 guys, I don't think. So they're going to do some maneuvering. It's interesting.
They got to get up into the third. Somehow.
We're talking with Matt Perino, Buffalo Bills beat reporter here on the beat. And what's interesting to me about the draft, and I don't know if it'll ever flush out of our systems. Like, every football fan feels like you got to get, like, move way up. And the list that you read can be read about running backs, can be read about quarterbacks, can be read about every single position. And then you're finding Stephon Diggs in the fifth round, right? You're finding so many more guys that are like Hall of Famers and like great players. I asked, I think, Joe Marino at one point in time, how in the heck did Stephon Diggs fall to 5? Like, how does that happen? And it's like, just the way we see things. It's like, well, you saw it wrong. Not him personally, but it's like, it's just crazy.
Well, Brandon Bean, did you see that interview he did with Kevin Clark? By chance, 2 weeks ago at the owners' meetings, Brandon, or it was a great question by Clark. He asked Brandon Bean, like, what's your most recent, like, oh, I wish I knew about that guy. And he went on and on about Puka Nacua, like, totally miscast him. Like, he goes to LA, turns into this superstar. And it honestly, like, and this might be putting again, jumping ahead. That's why, like, I'm not ruling out like a Ladd McConkey, like Xavier Leggett type of player at 28 for them to just stick and pick with that style of player, because I think that Brandon kind of wants that after watching Nacua come into the league and do what he did.
Yeah, for sure. Before I get to our last question for the audience, real quick, Matt, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, tell them what you're up to, and then I'll ask the last question and I'll get you out of here.
Cool. Best place probably over on X, Twitter, at Matt Perino, P-A-R-R-I-N-O, right there on the screen. And then everything funnels through that. And you mentioned Wing Nuts. This next show is really fun. It's this Saturday at Wing Nuts. We're going to be there at 6 o'clock. Show starts at 7. It is going to be a live mock draft, and we are actually going to allow fans to participate. They're going to get a chance to take a team, come up, make the draft pick, talk a little bit about why they made the pick and maybe what they're hoping for the Bills at 28 as we kind of move towards that pick. It's a little interactive. It's a little engaging. It's a different idea. It might be an absolute mess, but hey, it's a live show. Let's have some fun.
That's fun. That sounds great. Last question. Initial thoughts, just as far as outlook for the Buffalo Bills coming into this next season. I know that you already mentioned, as we all talk about, holes at safety, holes at defensive line. Like, who's the center of this football team? Right. Oh, it's Connor McDermott, right? And it's like, Connor McGovern. It's like, are you sure? So, yeah. So just at a glance right now, outlook for the 2024 season for the Buffalo Bills.
So I think that with Josh Allen, there's still this like inherent advantage in the division because he's dominated the Dolphins. I know it hasn't gone great against the Jets, but I almost think Diggs leaving in a weird way against that defense could be good for those matchups, because now there's a little bit. What did you say?
I would say if he learns the lesson of just being patient, because
yes, that too.
But just even wait, be patient.
Just even having like a different like plan for how Josh Allen's going to operate. You know, to a degree, he's going to force to Diggs at times because that's been his lifeline for so long. Now, if they have all these new pieces and, you know, potentially two new wide receivers and, you know, the Dalton Kincaid like uptick in production that and usage that I think everybody's hoping for, or most people are hoping for, they're just going to be a different team to defend. So I think you can maybe win in different ways. And I just think it's a tough division. I think all these teams are going to have tough schedules. I don't believe in Miami. As bad as the Bills' defense is taking a hit back, Miami's defense is not in a good spot. I love the cornerback, Kendall Fuller.
Yeah.
But if you can't get any rush, which Jalen Phillips coming off of the injury, I like the Shaq Barrett addition, but they're not going to have Wilkins in the middle. Bradley Chubb, I mean, at his age, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not right again all next season. Phillips probably has a better chance to get back earlier and be some version of himself. But the Bills, like, Sean McDermott's specialty is finding guys that you don't expect to have an impact and finding a way for them to have one. Terrell Bernard being the most recent example. I mean, Taron Johnson, fourth round pick, he turns him into an all pro. Like, I think there's going to be a couple in there. The D-line is a concern because there haven't been a lot of those examples. I mean, Ed Oliver took forever to develop, and I put a lot of that on Eric Washington, who I think that was addition by subtraction, by the way. But I still think the outlook's good. Do I think that they're still a Super Bowl contender right now? I don't know if I'm comfortable saying that at this stage, but the thing that you need in this league to contend for a Super Bowl is the quarterback, and the Bills have that. And as long as they have that, like, I'm going to wait and see. And I think maybe a fresh new look. Also, another big question mark, Joe Brady. Like, are we sold 100% that this is going to be this sweet symphony with his vision? And how much is the something we haven't talked a lot because they don't want to give us a lot of the details of this. How much of this is going to look like the Ken Dorsey, Brian Daboll offense? And how much of this is going to be the reimagined Joe Brady offense with some of the, that, you know, in it. And then Ronald Curry, the new quarterbacks coach, they go all the way back to New Orleans together, him and Brady. So how much of their own like system are they going to try to get in here? And they still have Aaron Cromer, who I think is an absolute magician as an offensive line coach. I still think the outlook is bright. But certainly not as bright as it's been the last couple off seasons.
Matt, thank you so much for your time. We're going to get you back on probably a couple times as the season goes. Yeah. I'm really excited about the season version of this because we'll get you guys before Wednesday, after Monday, coach's presser, and then before Wednesday, just to kind of like, what are you going to ask tomorrow, right? Yeah. Like, what do you want to hear them talk about?
It'll help me get ready for Wednesday, so that's great.
Yeah, super, super excited. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This has been On the Beat on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. Stay tuned. What is it? Thursday. Jerry. So this is the fun part about being new. Jerry's going to do a show Thursday. We don't know what it's going to be. We don't know who's going to be with him. It could be John. It could be whoever. But stay tuned for Thursday. I believe they're going to go at 7 o'clock. I think it's going to be Jerry and John on Thursday night. So that should be a fun little matchup there. But Matt, thank you so much for joining us. For everybody here at Overreaction, go Bills. Can't say it, can you?
Peace.